It's the Tiltcast episode 630, four times less wise.
This week, guys, we talked Death Stranding 2, Abiotic Factor, Helldivers 2, and Hollow Knight Silk Song. Stay tuned.
They mined my mouth.
We definitely didn't talk about strangers in his mouth.
Just gonna have a loud sip.
It's the Tiltcast. We're an M-rated show. I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
I'm
Rust.
And by the three of us, you're gonna get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news, and some announcements. So let's start with the bigger part, because you know, sometimes it's a long show. I don't know how long you guys listen to the end. We're changing format. We're going to get active on YouTube. And I think we know it's probably going to take a while to catch on. So we're going to still keep posting the audio episodes, but we're going to do some short segments on YouTube, not quite as long as this, and then record the podcast roughly once a month. It'll also give us a little bit more flexibility as adults to do what we need to do. So you'll get a.
I don't want to adult.
Yeah. So, yeah. Just be looking forward to it. It's tiltcast.com or youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z, because Jason likes the Z. But yeah, that's, you will get all of our content on YouTube, not on this episode, but after this episode going forward. So yeah, we'll try it out. Try it out for a while. See how it goes.
New things.
Well, you know, a lot of it, I mean, to be honest, it's a format change that we've talked about off and on for several years now. It's one that's long overdue because of how just
we tried
busy, you know, our lives got, etc. So
it was some really cringy shit, and I'm sure that we'll have some more really cringy shit on the platform. That won't change. We're very cringy people.
Well, and the other thing too is like people who consume podcasts. I think the demographic's been changing. Been looking at a lot of this stuff, right? There's not as many people listening to a video game podcast right now as they are consuming YouTube content and TikTok, and I'm not into the ticky-tack as much, right? Maybe at some point I'll be kind of forced to get on that platform with this content, but I don't think we know how to short form quite that short. So we're going to go the route we're going to go the route of YouTube because that'll at least give us some, you know, 15 minutes, which it's going to be hard for us to hit that anyway. But that's our goal, 15-minute videos. We'll see how it does. And then hope to gain a different audience from the YouTube stuff. So
maybe,
yeah,
we'll see. I mean,
I consume a lot of YouTube, man. I'm always watching, like, you know, just name dropping, right? Like Jay's Two Cents or Splattercat or something like that while I'm gaming. Put it up on the old second monitor, watch it while I'm playing some grindy ass game, right? And it just works for me. And occasionally I have to stop and focus on the game altogether, which actually at this age kind of bugs me. So a game that forces me to gauge 100% of my attention sometimes is hard. But speaking of that, what's Rusty, you're grumpy because you got your teeth have been removed, right?
I am less wise.
You are less wise.
I am very less wise. I'm four times less wise at least. Yeah, so on a spectrum of things that I would not recommend at 44, getting your wisdom teeth removed, especially if you have wisdom teeth that that have a nerve wrapped around the root. Doctor said that there was a possibility. He's like, we did a 3D, you know, x-ray, and we can see, you know, the nerve right there, and there's a good chance that this is going to suck for you. Exact words.
And so it did suck.
Oh yeah.
Did he put his foot on you and yank it out, or were you completely knocked out?
I was, let's see. So they said that I would be out. They said that I would be out cold. Like, I've been under before. I've been through surgeries before, and this was oral surgery, right? I mean, they were in my freaking head, yanking shit out.
I was awake.
You had strangers in your mouth, and you're awake.
I was awake, and it was the weird awake. Like, I will tell you, I don't have like sleep paralysis, but I have seen like visual representations of what sleep paralysis is for people, like, and this was as close to sleep paralysis as I've ever gotten.
Because you couldn't move?
I could not move anything. But my eyes were going, and I was about 32% there. Okay? Like, my brain was working, my eyes were moving, I was making eye contact with the dentist. While he's in my jaw, destroying my teeth. And that's exactly what it felt like. So, during a wisdom tooth extraction, at least in my situation, it felt like they were using, for lack of a better term, a Dremel tool in my head to break the tooth itself up into bits so that they could extract the bits.
That's so wait, they
sounded like
they were they grinding it out?
That's what it felt like to me. It felt like they cut the tooth in half, at least, or broke it in half in a way, and then extracted it, you know, that way. But I had curved roots, which was wrapped around the nerve on my bottom jaw. So they knocked me out good to the point where I couldn't feel any pain. All I could feel was pressure and the sickening feeling of having your teeth shatter in your head. That's all I can remember. Thankfully. Otherwise, I think I would have come out of that chair swinging. But, yeah, they got all four. The top ones came out real easy. The bottom ones did not. And those were the ones that they spent the most time on. I've got, the type of, you know, stitch in the bottom jaw that, you know, dissolves over time. And, yeah, I have had major jaw pain for the last week. Don't get these done on a Tuesday. It ruins you.
It is pretty far from Saturday, though. So there is that.
Yes. I thought for sure that they said that they gave, they said the doctor said this. There's four things that are going to happen. There is bleeding, swelling, pain, and infection. Of those four, three of them are 100%. And that would be the first three. We're going to try to minimize the fourth one. You know, with as much as, with, you know, but you are going to bleed, it's going to swell, and it's going to suck. And there's nothing, you know, you don't come and sit in this chair wanting this to happen. It just needs to happen. So it was very matter of fact, you know, and I appreciate that. I do. But
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't. I'm glad it's done, but I am more than ready to be over the whole lower jaw pain situation.
This too shall pass.
It does. It only takes. He said that the worst passes after the third day, which I agree. The third day was the worst. I could barely. It was all I could do to do soup. I've had problems getting my calories in. So it's been a struggle. But I am past the worst part of it now. I am now on the downward slide of healing through that, and that is that's great. Only past an arm and a leg and 4 teeth. I did not get a discount from the Tooth Fairy fuckers. told them that it was that I get on average $100, and I expected that as a discount on my bill.
That's a thing, or is this a joke?
That was a joke. It's a joke. Oh my god.
Sir, if you still believe in Tooth Fairy,
no, I was thinking maybe problem. The dentist did something for like no, kids, no, and like Rusty was expecting it.
No. They did usher me out the back door, which was very interesting. I came in to the oral surgeon's office. Front door, mom was there. She was the one to drive me home because they were going to knock me out, and they needed to have somebody that was responsible to drive. Got it. All right, perfect. For some reason, they ushered me out the back door. So they had my mom move the car, meet me at the back door, and I was placed in the back, you know, in the car, and I'm like, straight out of the chair, out of it, completely freaking out of it, like, right, like I can't feel anything in my face. I'm drooling on myself, and here I am. I know that they do like some of the drugs that they give you to knock you out is. The truth serum drugs, right? I talked about this last time.
Right.
So the only thing that was going through my mind when I'm sitting in the front, you know, in the car is get the seatbelt on, click, and then like 5 minutes go by of me just staring out the window and then a blank screen. Like you can hear like the Windows 95 startup sound going on in my head as I start to come through. And then all I could do was think, I've just been dosed with truth serum. Think pure thoughts. Think pure thoughts. I don't want to say anything in the car around my mom that is going to get me in trouble later. Think your thoughts.
I almost texted your mom to say, hey, I need you to prod and prompt and get me video.
I was
Rusty Unhinged.
She was actively disappointed that I did not speak all the way home.
So your goal was just don't speak.
I my goal was not to say a goddamn thing. I did not need any secrets coming out. I did not need any I didn't need any of that. She did not need to be recording me at all. I know she had her phone set to record audio. I know she did, because she set it on the console where she doesn't normally set it. She had it set to record audio, and I was silent the entire way that I recall.
Have you followed up?
The best part was the next day in our group thread, me teasing you that Tammy had actually sent me something.
I know, and that's the thing is that
I was so paranoid. I'm so disappointed.
I was so locked in on the idea of not saying a word that I disassociated from reality enough that I didn't know whether or not I actually did say anything.
I wonder if he just looked completely bamboozled the whole way back, right?
I was drooling on myself, for fuck's sake. I looked like I just... I don't know. I don't know. I can't answer it.
Remember having my mouth stuffed with gauze? I don't remember. This was before cell phones. Recording stuff. All I remember is... Well, I'm saying that conversation on the way back because it was my aunt's a dental hygienist, right? And she used to work in a place that's in Henrietta, which is about 2 hours away from here, right? And so there was about a two-hour drive back home after I got my wisdom teeth removed where my mom definitely screwed with me when I was 18 years old, getting all my secrets.
I was kind of expecting it, and that's why I was so locked in on don't say a word, don't say a word, don't say a word, right?
And Cam didn't screw with you? Your roommate?
No, because
he's on another cruise.
he was working. I mean, when I got home, so my procedure was really early in the morning, right? So it was like 8 o'clock. Very first person to come through the door. They got me in there, and the procedure took like maybe 2 hours, I think. I don't know. My sense of time that day really sucked. So by the time I got home, it was just before noon. He was still working. So I came home, and the only thing I could really do was kind of like stare at a wall for a minute. I came in, sat down at my computer, and just kind of like poked my lower lip, like just kept poking it. Like, I can't feel that. I'm like, I need to drink something. I grab a bottle of water and realize that drinking is impossible when you can't feel your lower jaw.
So you look at yourself in the mirror?
I just tipped my head back, poured what I thought was enough in there, and like forcibly tried to swallow it just so that I could like say that I drank some. But I couldn't feel anything, so I had most of it went on my chest. And
so you gave yourself a watery pearl necklace.
it was bad. So I cleaned myself up and I said, you know what? I'm the only thing I can really do at this point is just sleep. Cause I'm not in my right mind to be able to do anything. And I can't really like exist. You know, this sucks. So like, I'm just going to sleep off the drugs and, you know, move on from there. So I slept for a good portion of the day. When I woke up, I still couldn't feel my jaw. They got real good. So that day I didn't eat anything at all. And I barely drank anything. And I was worried that I was just gonna dehydrate. Like, I'm already shrinking. I don't need to shrink any faster. It's just a thing. Like, the experience was not one that I want to go through ever again. Now, the problem and the reason why this sucked so hard for me is because the wisdom teeth were healthy and they were, you know, the bottom ones were wrapped around that nerve. That's the whole reason why it sucked. Like, most people go in for extractions, they already have, like, teeth that are ready to come out. Right? These were not ready to come out. They were fucking locked in. So, yeah. It's... It, is a bad. But now that I got that done, it was it's over. I don't have to deal with it anymore. Really expensive. really expensive. But yeah, it is now beyond me. Behind me. I don't have to worry about truth serum ever again.
So for the most part, though, you have just been recovering. You haven't really played a lot of games, though, right?
No, I mean, the most of what I've been doing is, you know, just comfort games. You know, things that I can get up and walk away from. And that, for me, especially in the summertime, is Final Fantasy. So I played Final Fantasy 14, you know, a lot. And it's just, you know, comfort gaming is all. I don't really want to pick up anything new, even though there's been a couple new games that came out this week.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm sure that we'll talk about. It's just, like, I didn't want to really do anything new. Or anything that required more brain power than turn on, press button. You know,
that's fair. I know me and Jason in your absence jumped into some Helldivers too.
We did.
And after Jason got used to the controls again.
And set all my controls back up because apparently the update changed all the settings I'd previously had. So I was having to work it out.
Yeah.
Took me like two matches to get.
To figure out
stratagems working correctly.
Yeah, Jason couldn't figure out how to get the inputs to work again for us, or to pull up the stratagem list. So if I died, I was just dead.
Oh well, I mean, okay then.
Well, because I like had a custom control scheme for my mouse set up through Logitech, right? And then the Helldivers update, like, took away all the changes I'd made in the key bindings in the game settings to make all of that happen.
I think
so I had to like figure out what was not correct anymore and fix it, yada yada.
We really should play more of that. That game's really good.
We should.
Like, that may be my favorite multiplayer experience since Halo Reach. Or Halo ODST. Like, hands down. It's so good. Even when it's hard, it's so good.
Yeah.
And there's so much more to unlock right now. Like, I even unlock the... So when you log back... If you haven't logged back in for a while, like, I logged back in and I got max medals because of all the whatever efforts I'd been a part of. The only thing I'm missing is I'm missing the orange and pink resources so I can unlock. I still got quite a bit of stuff to unlock. I even unlocked the whole ODST pack from just random. Like, I had so many medals, I just went through and unlocked the extra currency to get the premium packs and went through and used medals to unlock that stuff, and then I bought a premium pack off of that. So I got the ODST, and then I had so many medals, I went through and unlocked all the weapons in the ODST package. There's a whole system now, we haven't played it in a long time, and there's a whole system now where as you use a gun, it levels up, so you add perks and attachments to different guns. Not all of them, but a big chunk of the guns now have different perks, so they've actually become better. Whether it be like their ergonomics on how fast they aim, or how fast to reload, like how snappy it is on the sights, how like there's chokes you can add to the shotgun. So I would use that flame shotgun and then added a choke to that so that I had a narrower spread. Like, it's just good. It's so good. I would love to get back to playing that somewhat regularly again. Like, even once a month for a couple of hours, I'd like to play that again. I know do no good playing with randos. But
I mean,
me and Jason were having a blast. And we weren't even playing, like, we got up to, like, you know, level 4 settings.
Yeah.
And I was showing Jason the magic of the disposable anti-tank rocket as we just drop that down over and over and over again and just blow shit up with it. Like, it's... There's so many more new weapons, too. Like, it was... It's just good.
I enjoyed my time with it. I would need to relearn how to dive.
I think you just do what me and Jason did, and you start out on easy and then just kind of get used to it. And then, like, I replayed the damn tutorial because I forgot the controls, basically. And once I got through that, I was like, okay, I remember how this works. And I was like, oh, yeah, we scout the map and look for stuff as much as we can before shit gets overwhelming. And then we go back and, you know, extract. So do the objectives, get close bug holes as we go, and telling Jason to sneak instead of fire at every single bug patrol, because that's how we started, and that's how we got overwhelmed. But yeah, so it's a good game, and Jason has, like, no unlocks, so he needs unlocks. I'm just saying that. This is a game shit to play by yourself.
I'd be down as long as I could actually, like, you know, brain. And at the moment, raining is hard.
Well, you just let us know, Bubba, and we will jump on some Helldivers because, you know, for democracy.
Heck yeah.
But raining is hard.
Jason, did you end up playing anything else this week?
No, I played a little bit more Helldivers and a little bit more Baldur's Gate 3 because I'm still, like, you know, going back through that. It's just, you know, tickling an itch at the moment. But aside from that, not really much else has changed.
Well, I finished Death Stranding 2.
Damn.
Final hour count on that was 86 hours.
Is there a movie at the end?
No, it wasn't that bad. You kind of just get locked into doing missions at a certain point. So if you look up what's the point of no return, I want to say it's like Order 40 or Order 41 or something like that. And then for about, once you get to that point, you're about 4 or 5 hours from the end of the game. So that's what I spent all day yesterday doing. We had about 5 hours of game time yesterday. So in between chores, I ended up doing the rest of the orders. And then it opens, just like the last one, right? When you're done, it opens back up and lets you do additional stuff. So, like, there was a new area that I had unlocked that would give me additional tech, right? If I did more deliveries, etc. And I decided I was at a good place to stop, right? Like, if I go back, I might do some of that stuff. But I got to a good... I was glad to have completed the game, and I've got so much in my backlog, I wanted to move on. And I built out most of the roads. I kind of got locked into that last series of events because I didn't really look up very much in that game at all. So I kind of got locked into the last series of events, and I hadn't finished the last railway. I was about 3 of those left, and I had about, I don't know, 5 different little spots to put a road in to connect a road all the way through the continent. So, but zip lines are still key through the mountains. That was the thing I learned. And it was very enjoyable. It was a drug infused, weird Kojima, I don't know, movie at the end. When I say movie, it's a very interactive at the end. So, like, it's broken up the last game, right? Like, it kind of has you go through about 2 hours of barely interactable cutscene, right? Hey, did you finish it, Rusty?
I finished the first one, yeah.
Yeah, so you remember at the end, it's like about 2 hours of kind of barely interactable cutscene.
Right.
This breaks it up into a series of several very epic events, which are pretty awesome. And then the final cutscene is about 15 or 20 minutes. Very manageable. And the over-the-topness in this is, it, like, surpasses the first one. Straight up had me laughing because I was supposed to be taking something really seriously, but I just couldn't because it was so ridiculous and also awesome at the same time. And that's all I'm going to say. Very hats off again to Kojima and his weirdism. I don't know what's going on under the hood there. Seems like there's a lot of acid going on, even though I know drugs are very illegal in Japan. And if he's doing that without drugs, like, bro is probably crazy. Because it's out there. Let's just say that. That last of the game is pretty, like, way more out there than the first game was. Also, like, surprisingly touching in certain points, too. The second game really digs into who Lou is. I think that's pretty obvious, right? The cover of the game's him putting his head against the baby's head, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very much a story about Lou. And, of course, Sam Porter Bridges. Very well done, though. Very well done. Very epic. Epic in a silly but also awesome way. Like, everything is, like, silly but also awesome, if that makes sense. And it's so hard to not talk about. It's so ridiculous in parts, but also awesome. That game's like 4.8 out of 5. We'll play again at some point. Very, very, very. Like when it comes out on PC, I'll probably buy it and just play it again so I can have it on ultra, ultra, ultra settings. I had to play it on performance mode to get the frame rate I wanted on PS5. But, like, it does, like, on the performance road, it is running at a lock 60. So it still looks very good. Like, it, when it does a cutscene, it goes into full render mode. And then as a game outside of that, like, it's in performance mode, I don't notice a huge difference. Like, they lower the weather effects a little bit. There's a lot of really crazy battles. It's a little bit more focused on combat. Like, there's a, it's not called an M60, they just call it a machine gun, but essentially the M60 is really good. The shotgun, I don't remember if the first one I had it, but it has a burst fire mode and a grenade launcher. The straight up rocket launchers are awesome. The grenade launchers are awesome. All the weapons, like, it feels a little bit smoother, and then you get some extra weapons I won't mention towards the end of the game, which are silly but awesome. But, yeah, like, big range of emotions, right? Like, some stuff you can take really seriously. Like, some stuff kind of mirrors something like What Dreams May Come. Some of it's straight-up horror. Some of it is, like, straight-up sci-fi bullshittery. Some of it's a lot of, like, questioning the meaning of life. A lot of it really, just like the first game, is about building connections. Like, it's about building human connections, and it's done so by building roads, right? You're building package connections between people. But the whole game is about building connections, which I think was why it resounded so well when the original came out in 2020 during COVID. But this expands on that a little bit more, and it's just awesome. We'll just leave it at that. play it. If you like Kojima, play it. It's great. Haven't gotten a chance to really dig in much, but I did get Metal Gear Solid 4 Remake. I know Kojima's not playing it. Basically plays exactly like the first one, just looks way better. That game came out like 20 plus years ago. I don't know if you guys realize that. But it still does, so it would be a lot more annoying if I had a slow SSD. But if you guys remember, every single area was a little pocket-sized area, and at the time on PS2, they had to do that, I'm assuming, because they were rendering a lot, and that was as much memory as they had. So, like, everything is like a little pocket-sized tile full of a bunch of stuff, and then you move on, right? They're all little set pieces. It still does that. And I guess on a slower machine, some people are complaining that it takes a little bit longer to load between sections. Again, I'm brute forcing my way, so I haven't had those same issues. So for me, it's like a 1 second load time in between areas. But it is kind of weird. It's just kind of, it's like a 1-to-1 remake of the old game, except that they have improved controls and you can switch actively between first person and third person mode. It's very easy to shoot. It is comical in how fast Snake dispatches bad guys. Right, you just walk up to him and hit the close quarters combat button, and he just like instantly KOs him. It's just like flips him over his arm, and they're instantly KO'd, which is awesome. I've seen some pretty hilarious screenshots about that game. I want to dig in a little bit more. But I've got other things that I've kind of got on my docket to play more of. Play more Abiotic Factor. That game's still incredibly good. Something I didn't know is until I did watch a video on this, because looking on ways to be more efficient. Build your base somewhere close to the starting area, because all roads go back to the starting area. That game is really, really very much Dark Souls 1 meets Half-Life. And what I mean by that is you're always unlocking shortcuts back to the beginning area. So if you think about Dark Souls 1, how they had the main area with the weird snake monster guy, and all roads led back to that, you can basically do the same thing in this game. You could expand, if you really wanted to, you could expand on that first area that you have the, basically the cafeteria. You could make that your base. The area with the pool that has the unlimited water supply, you could make that your base. You can build over anything if you want to. So, like, you can use these bridges to build out platforms. At one point, I had a base up in that upper barbell area, and then I had platforms all the way out over the pool and a little staircase that I built down to the pool to grab water. Like, you can do stuff like that. Some of the resources respawn in the main area, but, like, the level design on Abiotic Factor is very dense. And good. And once you start unlocking, I've got a forklift unlocked that's pretty good, as well as a handcart. But you can carry a handcart with you and then just load it up and then just run that back to base, so you're never out of, like, inventory space. But yeah, once you find a handcart or the recipe for the handcart, like, you should be doing that all the time. But I also found out that you could take tech scrap and take a plug, and as long as you have a pile of tech scrap in your inventory, you can keep moving the outlet further and further away from the main outlet. So you literally can build a base anywhere. It doesn't matter where you're at. If there's an outlet, I don't know that there's a limit. I stretched one out like 20 spaces just to test a theory, and I was like, this really does keep stretching out forever. This is awesome. And then I found another outlet, and I was like, why did I do this? I was like, just to prove a point. But it's good for, like, repositioning stuff. If, like, the way, if your cable management is pissing you off, that is one way that you can redo cable management to make it look better. That was how I figured that out. It was like, I think I actually looked up how to make my wires look cleaner in Abiotic Factor. And then I found a video. It was like, oh yeah, if you have tech scrap, you can literally just continue to move the outlet, and it creates a little mini outlet. And so now I have managed my cables and my bases. I'm not even, like, a quarter of the way into that game. That game's amazing. That's probably going to end up on a Game of the Year list somewhere for me. Like, I've gotten some really good games so far this year. And then the main one I've been playing a lot of the last... Well, no, let me go back. No Man's Sky just keeps getting better. I'm figuring it out right now. But... So you can now build ships, kind of like you could in Starfield, but you have to have the components for those ships. And so the way that I found that, again, I kind of had to dig in to figure this out. I played some No Man's Sky this week. And you can get navigational charts basically anywhere. And then on all of the star stations, there's a guy that trades those out for... specific charts, and if you go for the distress beacon ones, you basically can just repair a ship's thrusters and pulse engine, I think, and that's it. And then get back in your ship, fly back to the, space station, and then recall your ship, the one that was damaged, and now you have a ship. Now, most of them have a bunch of broken components, so you can do a couple of things. You can break it and essentially melt it for scrap and get the components and sell for money. Or you can grab different individual components off of that ship by salvaging it. And you can use that to start building your own ships. And you can build big ships like freighters or you can build like another starship. So I started experimenting with that a little bit. And there's like three or four different main stories going on right now, which is also pretty awesome. Like No Man's Sky is really good right now. Like I was looking, I need a space game, right? Like that was going through my head. And I was like, not Starfield. What am I thinking? So I tried that again, because the best thing about Starfield was the starship building. No Man's Sky basically has the same system. It's just you have to discover all the components, essentially. I'm sure there's other things you do to get all the stuff together to make it, but, like, yeah, it's in a really good place. That's a really good game to play right now if you've got nothing to do. It's a very comfy game. You basically just quit anywhere and you're saved, right? After a little while, like, it starts to make sense how everything works together. Game still runs amazing. Still. It didn't used to, but it does now. And the last really big, the one really big thing that's kind of broke the internet, Silksong finally came out, right?
Yes.
On Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It broke Steam. Because so many people were getting it. And the hype was there because people have been waiting for it for a while, right? And it's not an expensive game. I'll talk more about this stuff here in the news section because there's some really interesting news stories going on. But it literally broke Steam for a little while and you couldn't download it. The crazy thing about Silksong is it's made by three devs. Team Cherry is literally three people. So Hollow Knight sold 15 million units. That's a really good game that came out like 8 years ago, right? We've all played and beat. I don't know if you beat it or not, Jason, but it's a good game.
Yeah, I beat it.
It's a really good Metroidvania. Silksong's also a Metroidvania. It's harder than the first one. There's a lot of people moving in 45-degree angles, and what I mean by that is there's a lot of areas that require you to bounce around on things, and you have to do that with a downward attack, and your base weapon attack, or your base, you get these things called crests, and I can't remember if this was in regular Hollow Knight or not. But the crest kind of gives you a weapon move set per se. So like your base one is got decent reach, but if your downward attack and decent speed, but your downward attack is at a 45-degree angle. The nice thing about it is you can equip a lot more items on that crest. Then you've got one that I found called the Reaper's Crest, which gives you a straight down attack, but it's a little bit slower. And then when you use your silk abilities, and then if you heal, and then you start attacking people, every attack like drops a little ball of silk, and then you use that to fill up your silk meter really quickly, so you can do another big attack or heal yourself again really quickly. So the main thing I'm getting at is the game is harder, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that there's a lot more aerial combat than the last one. And a lot of the enemies hit for, if you remember on Hollow Knight, like they would hit for one bar of health, essentially. A lot of the bosses hit for two. And so you have to dance a lot more, I think. But like, it's not insurmountable, right? Like I was trying to figure out where I was at, and I'd already gotten past a boss that a lot of the people that were playing it were stuck on. It took patience, right? If you have that Dark Souls level of dedication to beating a boss, it's not impossible. You just play around with trying to figure out how to dodge all this stuff and then work on getting attacks. And then the other thing, and I think this applies to bullet hells, right? Like, you're looking at what's coming at you on the screen versus where your character is, and if you've got enough spatial awareness to move your character independently of tracking what's going on the screen, then it becomes infinitely easier. But is it good? Yeah, it's really good. I've had a lot of fun so far. I've explored a big chunk of the bottom part of the map. Unlocking stuff as I get new abilities, essentially, right? It's the same thing as like Hollow Knight, right? You'd find a new ability and then it gives you better. It's just like Metroid. The whole reason we call it a Metroidvania, right? You find a new ability that gives you the ability to travel somewhere else on the map. Not really too much of a grind either. Like, I guess some quick tips is you get these things called rosary beads, and the rosary beads are what you use to buy like maps and stuff like that. there are enemies that you kill that will drop those, and there'll be places on the map. There's a static item on the map. You hit it with your sword, and it drops a bunch of beads. And then when you die, you drop all of your beads, right? So the beads can be put on a rosary string. So it'll, for example, it'll cost like 80 beads to put it on a 60 bead string. Well, the thing is, you don't lose that when you die. So I went to an area and farmed up about 1,000 beads and put them on strings, and then stopped worrying about if I lost beads or not, because that was enough to buy anything at any vendor in any place all the time. And then once I built up a decent chunk of them, I'd go back and do the same thing. You use your shell fragments for other abilities, so you don't level up in the traditional, like if you don't remember Hollow Knight, it's pretty similar. But you don't level up in the traditional way. You level up by unlocking different abilities by finding stuff on the map, essentially, right? So all the abilities use a certain amount, have a certain amount of charges, and a refill amount cost shell shards. So you rest at a bench. You use your shell charges to level up. The early one is a throwing knife that you find. And then that throwing knife, you know, is super handy because you might need a distance attack that you don't want to spend silk on. Well, you use the throwing knife. And I've got like 7 other abilities now that you can swap out at the bench. Yeah, and you use the rosary beads for a lot of stuff. Like you might use it to unlock a save bench or unlock fast travel. So a fast travel option, which I think is similar to Hollow Knight, but essentially you kind of, you unlock a place to ride something from place to place. But yeah, is it good? Yeah, it's really good. And the hype level is pretty ridiculous right now. I don't know how many people are actively playing it right now, but yesterday there was like 500,000 people actively playing it on Steam.
I mean, it was basically been teased for years and years and years, and then all of a sudden, oh, we're gonna come out with it, and you know, then it comes out like, okay.
And
it's got a really weird. It has a really weird release. Like it's very. It's like, boom, there it is. All of a sudden, like, there was no news for fucking years. And then, you know, in the space of, like, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's coming, and it's out.
Yeah, and it's, the studio behind it is, again, really small, right? Like, there's not, like, a PR team. There's not, like, a, it's literally 3 guys, right?
And I get that, and I'm not gonna dog shit and any of them for doing the best that they can. I get it, but it's also like some news is better than zero news, and zero news is what we got for a long fucking time. So, like a long fucking time.
Yeah.
Well, and
this that, since we're already.
But for me, that destroyed any hype that I had. You know, I wanted more, Hollow Knight, but I also wanted more Hollow Knight fucking, a long-ass time ago.
Well,
I've moved on hard from there, and it really wasn't a hype cycle to begin with. It's just like...
I read some interviews about this, and this is going to be loosely accurate. Because it's just coming from memory. But essentially, the three of them became millionaires, like multi-millionaires after that release, right? Because it sold 15 million units, right? And for a while, they didn't want to do another game. And then they decided to do another game, and they did it at their own pace until they were done. And, like, there's not any bugs. Well, yeah, duh. There's bugs all over the place, but that's because it's a game about bugs. But, so they just kind of did it however long it took to get it out, because there's a programmer, there's an artist, there's a guy that composes stuff, right? And that's it. And so they kind of just did it as they did things, right? Because all of these guys, like I said, don't ever have to do anything the rest of their life ever again if they don't want to. Especially this is probably – it was 500,000 people on Steam, and this was a multi-platform release.
Yeah. Well, they're basically just making sure that
and it's self-funded
for sure that they don't have to do anything.
Yeah, it's self-funded. Like, these guys were funded on a $30,000 Kickstarter. And that's what they survived off of while they created Hollow Knight. Back, so it took them like 2014 to 2017 to create Hollow Knight, right? Whatever else they were doing in the background to make money, because they weren't getting any funding. $30,000, and at that time, I think it was two people, so that was $15,000 in 3 years worth of work to make Hollow Knight. And they came out with what they came out with, right? And then they had a massive amount of funding. It's not a publicly traded company. It's literally their company. They own it, you know, their co-owner, co-CEO, and that's it. And then the third guy they moved on that helped with, I want to say, porting and composition. And I think they hired somebody outside for composition. And I think they've got somebody, the guy from Stardew Valley did some voices, but none of the voices are in English anyway. They're in bug language. And yeah, you're still hearing you, Jason. So
I think Justin's dropped.
No, I really haven't. So anyways, we'll come back. We'll do some news. And we're back.
Well,
woo.
Woo. Hopefully with less internet issues between me and Jason. This is getting ridiculous.
Get fiber, bitches.
I do have fiber. Mine was literally a wife issue.
Yeah. Wow. His is somebody blocking the wrong IP address.
I'm single with fiber. I'm winning.
Winning. Well, anyway.
I even have the device's name in the network management app.
Is yours named Fuck Jason?
Off the CEO's computer once before, once just because I misclicked. Don't do that, by the way. Especially when they're on a phone call. They get very mad at you when you do that. I just said, you know what? It was an internet flip, and I fixed it as fast as I possibly could. It was back up in like seconds. Sorry.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've done that sitting here when she's literally texting me angry saying, block all their Wi-Fi while we were recording. And I clicked wrong and I realized it. And I clicked and I turned it back on without y'all noticing much because did it that fast. So y'all didn't even notice I paused my own shit. But she didn't notice. So. Y'all got to see me drop.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The wonders of home network management.
Yeah, dude. It's amazing. Also, the fact that you can, you know, that you're doing that, you know, to your kids is it's hilarious. Because I can do that at work.
it is like one of the few ways we have of actually, you know, making our point. And that is just shut off the internet to all of their devices.
I mean,
the best part is I can do that to my teenager's phone too, because not only can I block her network access, I can go into the AT&T app. And I can block her internet access on her phone.
So she can't hotspot. So,
makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes
sense. Okay. All right. I mean, that's a thing.
So when things aren't getting done, it's full internet lockdown around here.
Yeah. See, back in my day, Wi-Fi wasn't a thing. If I wasn't allowed to go on the internet, the phone line would just get unplugged. And
or if your mom really wanted to stop it right away, all she had to do was pick up the phone.
Right. Oh, yeah. Easy. And then...
Done.
And then if it was, you know, video games, it was, you know, take the power cord. Simple. Very easy. Very tactile. Just take power cord. Done.
Oh, yeah. And we, you know, we still do stuff like that, too, right? But the internet shutdown's immediate.
I mean, yes. Yes, I get that. I was also that kid that had a spare power cord that I would keep in the closet underneath a bunch of shit. Just for that reason. but yeah, I never abused that fact, right? So it was, yeah. Anyway, news. We need to get news done.
Yeah,
because we don't know whether or not the internet's going to stay with us or not. So
Jason's going to have like 37 pieces to piece together if we don't. So
yeah,
so, go ahead.
I'll say I'll lead us off. Last week, Paradox announced that Bloodlines 2, the much maligned Vampire the Masquerade sequel has finally a release date. It's October 21st. And along with that announcement, they announced that they will be locking two of the clans, La Sombra, and I don't remember the other one off the top of my head. Behind a paywall with a $30 DLC.
Yeah.
What? Why?
Yep.
Why?
Well, I think they kind of took a cue from like Baldur's Gate 3, which, also locked Warlock, Bard, Monk, and Barbarian behind a $30 or behind a $30 DLC at launch. Not something any of us recognized because we all like went full rich uncle on that game. But I think that's kind of where they're taking their cue. That said, according to this article on PC Gamer, with the change to the structure, Paradox is preparing to refund PlayStation pre-orders of the game with instructions that customers renew their pre-order under the new pricing structure.
Fuck 'em.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I am now firmly in the camp of fuck 'em in the ass. I really think that's scummy as fuck. Are they really going to be gaining much from this? I mean, it is a massive fuck you to the fan base. It is a, you know, if they're refunding a bunch of pre-orders, it's a financial risk that they're taking. Because honestly, they, you know, the people who pre-ordered could be like, no, fuck you. I'm not going to pre-order now. Thank you for my money back. Because that's exactly what I would say if I had pre-ordered that game. You'd be like, fuck you. Thank you for my money back. I'm never going to play your game ever again. Simple. Easy. Here I'm thinking I'm going to get, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to be able to play, you know, my favorite clan, and then, you know, all of a sudden my favorite clan's behind a paywall, and now I have to, you know, now for me to fully realize my version of playing through this game, I've got to pay $30 more. Fuck you. Eat my ass. Now, add more to the game with your DLC. Don't lock shit that should be part of the game behind it. Paywalls suck. Add content. Simple.
You want something that's going to be a value add to your to your game, not something that is here's 3/4 of the game. If you want the other quarter of the game, you have to pay us $30 more. No, I need 100% of the game first, and then give me something additional for that money, right? So it's basically solidified that I'm not going to give them a dime. this game is so along the same lines of as Silk Song with me, with the fact that it's been in my wish list for a long fucking time. It was announced many, many years ago. It's been in development hell for a long ass fucking time. And, honestly, with it being as troubled as it is, I've lost basically all interest in continuing to support this game. So,
it is on Game Pass.
And that is probably the only way I'd play it, is for the price of Game Pass.
It's a pretty good game, honestly.
What? Oh, no. Silk Song is a little different. Okay, I get where we're
going. You're saying development hell for Bloodlines. Yeah, Bloodlines has been three different developers, I think, at this point.
Right. So, Bloodlines...
Two developers, three different teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for Bloodlines, it's going to be, if I can't play it for free or for the price of, a subscription, I'm probably not going to buy it. Simple. So... They didn't fucking. That's my opinion, and you can choose what you like. But honestly, I think that's just the way I feel about that. I don't. It would have to be an exceptional fucking game for me to even consider it now. And considering the hell it's been through, I highly doubt that it's an exceptional game.
Yeah, I'm in the same space. I don't have a lot of interest until I see a lot of reviews. It's kind of the same thing I've got going on with Borderlands 4 right now. So watching Jeff Gerstmann play it. He has his own solo podcast, and he was also equally impressed and unimpressed. As in, nothing has changed, except that the humor has gotten quite a bit drier. He's like, I'm still looking at a bunch of different numbers and still not understanding what I should pick up. I don't know how much of this stuff is shit, so I'm just going to play through the rest of this demo. He was very unenthused.
I can understand that. Borderlands is kind of like you either like Borderlands or you don't.
I like Borderlands 1 and 2. I don't like 3, and I don't like the spinoffs.
I don't think anybody liked 3 or the pre-sequel.
Yeah, the pre-sequel or Tiny Tina.
Tiny Tina's was...
very average, except...
Tiny Tina's was a mixed bag, right? Like, there are parts of it I like. There were parts of it that were extremely annoying. My wife loved it.
But they're like... essentially one 3-2 good game, 3-2 bad game, good game, right? So far they have 3 games that were not good, and then they have the first 2 that were pretty good, right? So in my mind right now, they're not a trusted developer, so I'm just going to wait a while before I pick up Borderlands.
I can understand that. There's, in my... where I'm at right now as far as Borderlands is, I'm probably going to pick it up, but it might not be right away. I'm probably not going to play it day one. I will...
might be Christmas sale for me.
I'll pick it up when,
when I have, when I feel like it. I will look at the review cycle, but from what I've seen of it so far, yeah, it's more Borderlands. Yeah, there's things that they're specifically addressing that, you know, that were pain points for Borderlands 3, which, I mean, there was a lot of pain in Borderlands 3. If they can address some of that, even if the, you know, if it's a little drier, a little more serious, you know, then I can get with that. Some of the things that I am cautiously optimistic for is having different parts of different vendors on the weapons, which gives the weapons more variety, right? You know, because it was always like a Vladoff is a Vladoff, you know, a TDR is a TDR, but you know, if you've got, you know, a weapon that has like Maliwan fucking barrel and a Vladoff, you know, magazine and a, you know, a TDR receiver, right? You've got something that shoots elemental weapons with a large magazine, and then when you're done with it, you end up throwing it and it grows legs and it runs around and blows up. You know, something, you know, all of that in one gun, I can start to understand having a favorite legend, you know, a favorite kind of gun or a favorite, you know, non-legendary, non-orange gun that does everything that you want it to do. So it gives it a little bit more, you know, finding that combination would be a little bit more fun than just like collecting, you know, your legendary orange, you know, quality, you know, every one of this gun is exactly the same, you know, style guns. So I like looter shooters. I will eventually play it. That's just, you know, just going to come down to it. Whether or not it's, you know, it's well received or not, I've played every one of the Borderlands games, you know, with the exception of the Telltale game, which I guess is, from what I understand, fairly decent.
Yeah, it's already. It's okay. I have also played all of them, and this is the first time that I'm just going to say, stop fooling me with your bullshit. I'm going to wait.
I mean, it's very easy to, you know, to be like, hey, this, it's totally something that you can pick up on a sale, right? Honestly, you know, wait 5-6 months, it'll go on sale easily. You're not going to miss anything by fucking, you know, not being an early adopter on it, right? You know, for the most part, like the stuff that is quote unquote missable is the shift keys, which you can pick up from a fucking website. You know, most of those places just have like all of the different shift keys you can add to your account later on. And, you know, you get your free spins at the fucking, you know, gun roulette or whatever the fuck it is. You know, you're not going to miss out. So, yeah, it's going to be a thing. For me, it's kind of like in the middle. Like, it is part of the smorgasbord, and it is probably the, you know, it's going to be the flavor of looter shooter if I end up getting to looter shooter later, right? So that's the way I see, you know, game releases these days. Is I may not pick it up right away, but if it falls within that, you know, that taste that I'm looking for, you know, for a game, then that'll be the one I pick up. So,
well, speaking of games and picking them up and not being able to afford anything, there's a study that came out saying that only 3% of consoles purchased in the last couple of years came from the age group of 18 to 24, and 43% came from people whose households had over $100,000. which just goes to show you that the cost of everything is gone. $100,000 to me is still a lot of money, right? Like, I think to us is still a lot of money.
I mean, but if I was making six figures, I'd be happy.
But that being said, if you live in an area that's not where we live, that's not all. If you live in Chicago or LA or Denver or Houston or whatever, like $100,000 is just like basic middle class.
I guess.
It's not even I guess. When your rent is $4,000 a month, like you need to be making like $6,000 easy, right? $6,000 to $7,000 a month easy after tax in order to survive.
I guess I don't understand, you know, like the, you know, the bigger city situation. Like I get it. You know, I lived in Tulsa. I know what rent was and is in Tulsa. I live in Northern Michigan. I know what, you know, rent and the housing environment is up here. And honestly, it's like 25 to 35% more expensive up north in the sticks than it is in Tulsa. Go figure.
This is one of the cheapest places in the whole U.S. to live.
Yeah,
me and Jason have some extra money,
right? Yeah. But I'm going here, and I couldn't even imagine. But that's saying, you know, that said, six figures is not the norm for the you know, the median household in
no, it's the not. States. Hey, that's kind of the point. Like the median's still somewhere around, I don't know, 50 to 70 or somewhere in there.
Right. So for the most part, you know, console gamers are, you know, you're looking at,
and that's the cheaper way to game too.
Households. I mean, at least stable households. And you're seeing less and less kids pick up, you know, consoles because you pick them, you can basically, you know, mobile gaming and PC gaming is way more accessible. So yeah, unless they're playing, you know, honestly,
I think it's a big reason why I think Silksong did so well is it's $20. Right. It's on Game Pass and it's $20.
Right. And it's on Game Pass. I mean, honestly, yeah, it's possible. That's one of the reasons. The other reason is, well, it's been promised for a long ass time. So, but that's it. I mean, you're looking at that is a symptom of something, you know, something greater, right? And it would be interesting to kind of look into the, you know, the raw numbers of it, you know, going a little deeper, on, you know, who's actually buying consoles and what they're buying instead. If they're not buying consoles, I think that is interesting in, you know, kind of a future, you know, a future forward look, because, you know, what we're seeing right now with Xbox and PlayStation is the slow crumbling of the Berlin Wall, right? You know, Helldivers was, you know, the Helldivers, you know, ODST crossover is basically a, you know, good section of that Berlin Wall crumbling, right? Those were properties from both sides. They're now cross-playing. So what's the future going to hold? Like, are we all, you know, are we getting to that point where the console war is over and we end up with a, you know, with a market that just puts out, you know, a number of different machines that can play these games? Are we looking at, you know, instead of having an Xbox or a PlayStation, are we just looking at, you know, a game box, a Steam machine, as it were? or something, you know, that is built that can play, you know, games from any platform. You know, that might be, you know, that might be the future, you know, but it's, you know, whether or not we can make that affordable. By we, I mean, the studios like Xbox, you know, Microsoft, Sony, they don't make money off the fucking consoles. You know they don't. They're loss leaders.
Yeah, no, they make money off software.
Right. So it's moving in a, you know, in a direction where I see them outsourcing the hardware and focusing more on software and making it, you know, making that a core component of their company instead of, you know, instead of the hardware portion of it. And that could be good and it could be really bad, but it'd be interesting to see how, you know, how things are lying right now and what happens in the future. That's me being an adult and thinking about adult things like economy.
Well, I'll give you something else to piss you off.
Oh God.
So the, in the UK, right? Like I've been dealing with a lot of, let's just say censorship issues, right? And one of the things deals directly with video games, and that is we talked last week that they were talking about age verification in the UK before purchasing anything mature. And at one point they were requiring – I don't know if this is still the case, but they were requiring a photo of you to get past into mature rated content online. So this could be things like Netflix, right? And it required a photo of you to do that, and it used software to determine if you looked old enough. Well, a lot of people were using the photo mode in Death Stranding and taking pictures of Sam Fisher or Sam Bridges and using that. People are using VPNs. That's another thing, way they're getting around it. But on Steam, they require a credit card, and there are a lot of people in the UK that had their whole library turned off until they had a credit card linked. And the problem in the UK is that there are over 35% of adults that don't have a credit card. So there are people with complete non-access to their Steam libraries right now in the UK over this. Or you don't log into your account, essentially. You can't access any of the stuff that you purchased before. Even if your account shows like 21 plus years old, you're not getting into it because that's how it's working right now. But yeah, there's a lot of people that are pissed off in the UK right now over this and a whole bunch of other things. Which makes America such a great place to live, I hope.
I'm just doing a thing. Like you came up with, you know, with this, like, hey, I need need somebody to have a picture, like a picture of a guy, right? So I need I'm going to send you a screenshot. I know you listening can't see screenshots, but basically what the screenshot is me using AI to do a thing. It's very, very simple and would have gotten past that age verification. I'm sending the guys a picture of my exact prompt in ChatGPT. And it just says, I need a realistic picture of a 33-year-old man. And it says, I can generate this, blah, blah, blah. What do you want for hair color, you know, skin, you know, facial hair, you know, skin tone, clothing style, yada, yada. And all I said was, go ham. That's it. Just go ham. And it gave me...
That's 33?
I guess that's 33. It gave me a relatively realistic picture of a, you know, middle-aged man. I picked 33 out of my out of thin air, but
he looks about.
That's what I would do if I was a kid trying to get into mature content. You know, it's
Well, there you go. Let's use Rusty's method. I'm looking at the photo to see if I can detect anything that looks AI-driven.
I mean,
the bokeh is a little off.
The bokeh is a little off, but then again, bokeh on phones is not very great either. So,
yeah, because it's generated. It's not a lens. It's not generated with lens.
Right. So, you know, a bokeh on a phone is basically just, you know, the background blurred. You know,
that might work. Like, that's actually, I mean, does look pretty close to, like I said, really the only thing that screams at me that this is somewhat generated is the background blur. Like, why is that street wavy? But then it's blurred out with software driven bokeh. Anyways, yeah, like that's pretty passable. It's kind of crazy that's passable.
I think that would pass, you know, a cursory check on whatever software they're using to see whether or not, you know, you're really that old, right? You know, and that's all it really requires. I mean, if they can get Sam Porter Bridges to work, this would work, right?
Yeah.
You know, so that's my argument, is like, that's strike two. Like, I already went off last week about how daddy's credit card bypasses the whole thing. And how VPNs would bypass the whole thing. Now they're like, send a picture of yourself. Okay. It took me fucking 15 seconds to generate this on ChatGPT. Easy. Like, scary as fuck, but easy.
Yeah. And AI is comically bad at spotting AI.
If somebody was to send me this picture as, like, this is me, how am I, random dude from the internet, going to determine other random dude from the internet whether or not this is an actual person or if this was generated by a clanker?
A clanker.
I'll get to use the hard R. But, yeah, that's, I think the UK is going about this all wrong. and they're obviously lost as to how technology these days can bypass what would have been perfectly fine in, like, the early 80s and earlier, right? They're still using the Cold War era, you know, papers, please, tile of identification. And
that's what it feels like, isn't it?
We're in a completely different era now. So. UK just needs to stop with the papers, please. I mean, I grew up knowing that the internet was for porn. You're not going to stop kids from getting there. You do what you can to mitigate, but you're never going to put a roadblock up. In fact, you put roadblocks up, they're going to find ways around them.
Yeah, most of it's the VPN.
I mean, I use VPNs a lot. I know. And that is, VPNs are not 100% secure, but they're a lot more secure than going raw dogging it on the internet. So, and they have a lot of, you know, side benefits, like geolocations is a good side benefit. So that's what they're using, is they're they're just re-geolocating. So, fun times, man. UK just needs to get with them.
Well, I didn't have anything else. Did you guys have anything else?
We're good.
I mean, I'm good.
So I think with that, find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got, you've got basically two shows, Picking Up the Pixels and TVGP.TV, that do great things. And that's the end of the show.
All right, guys. Peace.